everybody, and welcome to Fireside Paranormal Podcast. My name is Jordan Klein, and again, I have a fun show planned out for today. We actually have Joe Montaldo, who is the president of ICAR, the International Community for Alien Research. So, always a fun time when we get to talk to him. I do have a couple announcements. I recently started a Patreon for the show, so check out patreon.com/firesideparanormal. We're doing $2 for a name drop on the show, and then I've also created a Discord, so the $2 gets you the name drop and access to the Discord server. I think we can have a lot of fun chatting on there. I think that would be a cool way to connect with everybody. I also made a really neat design for the merch. It is a Krampus theme, so it's got some snowflakes, it's got some Krampus. Check it out. Go to firesideparanormal.com, click on the merch tab, and then you can see it. It's only going to be available for a limited time. I'm only going to keep it to the end of the year, so you've only got a few weeks to get it. And in the same vein as Krampus, here locally in Wheeling, West Virginia, if you're local to the Ohio Valley, there is a haunted house that's doing a Krampus theme in December. So Wheeling's only haunted attraction, Infernum in Terra, presents The Naughty List. Open for one weekend only, December 3rd and 4th. Have you ever wondered what happens if you don't behave? Come to Infernum in Terra to check out what list you're on. Tickets are available online and at the gate for $15 each for general admission. Tickets are on sale now at ticketing.hellonearthhaunt.com. Gates open at 6:30 and it lasts until 11 o'clock at night. In a very interesting way to advertise for their event, they actually had a haunted house float with Krampus in the middle of our Christmas parade here locally. So it was definitely eye-catching, and I'm sure it'll be a fun event. So check that out. And let me tell you about two more events coming up. One of them is going to be in Moundsville, West Virginia. It is called the Misfits Metaphysical and Oddities Show. It's going to be December 4th, starting at 4 p.m., going all the way to 11 p.m. It's going to be an evening show. What to expect while you're there? Entry is $10 a ticket. Kids 7 under get in free. This is a family-friendly event, and tickets are only available at the door. Hollering from the hills of West Virginia, the Misfits Metaphysical and Oddities Show is coming to share everything creepy, dark, and dead. This event will be held at the most haunted place in all of West Virginia, the Moundsville State Penitentiary. This location was built in 1886 and housed some of the country's most violent criminals. Right before Christmas, this event is going to be home to buy anything you need for your witchy friend, odd cousin, and little something creepy for your mom and dad. To make sure everyone avoids scams, all ticket sales will be at the front door the day of the event only. You cannot buy tickets online or from anyone else. For vendors, they are still looking for vendors. Go ahead and contact them directly from their Facebook page. Again, that's Misfits Metaphysical and Oddities Show. The next event is the Hidden Marietta Paranormal Exposition. In the ballroom of the haunted and historic Lafayette Hotel, we will gather together all those who delight in the supernatural. From hands-on activities to speakers teaching you the secrets of haunted objects and locations, they have a unique array of creepy creative merchandise and a lot of things to experience and learn. There will be tours of the Lafayette also available. Advance tickets are $12 per person. Tickets at the door are $15 per person. And this event is coming January 29th, 2022. And that is going to be an earlier show. It's going to be 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Now, both of these events I plan on being at. I'm going to have a little table set up, probably bring a microphone, and invite folks to come and tell their stories. So definitely come out and see us. Mark your calendars. All right, I want to get to our guest. Sit with me by the fire as we welcome Joe Montaldo. He is the president of ICAR. He also runs United Public Radio. Joe, are you with us?
Yes, I'm right here. How you been?
Joe, it has been a long time.
Yes, especially what you told me earlier. It's definitely been a long time.
Yeah, I just let Joe know how many kids I had. I think it blew his mind.
Yeah. I was like, phew. Man, I think I'd move to like Europe after that, man.
Yeah.
Friends come from big families, but still, man, these days, that's a lot.
Yeah, so for those of you out there, I have four kids. I got a an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 1-year-old.
Oh my God, just shooting down, man. Poor boy had no idea what. This is the fun years. Just wait. I'm just saying, this is the fun years.
This is the fun year. That's what my I'm waiting. They're like, oh, don't worry. Wait till they're teenagers. Oh.
Well, you know, I'm not hating. I got one of my own and 4 stepkids, so I'm not hating.
Okay, so you're in the same boat.
I just feel for you. That's
all right, Joe. Here's what's fun. Like, we've had a lot of shows here in the last little bit. We've talked about, like, cryptids. We've talked about Bigfoot. We've talked about ghosts. We've talked about seeing spirits. We've talked about, like, ghost boxes, things like that. You bring an entire new aspect of the paranormal. You know, ICAR is the International Community for Alien Research. Tell us what you do.
Well, I don't want to drag y'all into a lot of stuff. So this organization was formed a long time ago, about 22 years ago, because I used to be a director for MUFON, and I was one of the advanced directors for him. So, and Walt Anders was a great guy. I don't take anything away from him. But all of a sudden, it was a lot of new blood came in. A lot of these guys had blacktop ties, and I noticed every time we put something in, we just didn't get anything back, and we were doing big caseloads and big investigations, and nothing was coming out of them. And then me and a couple of the director got together, and we did a case study of everybody who said they had been abducted, which was about 5,000 people. And we just went through and tried looking for commonalities. And so when we approached MUFON about this, they lost their mind. I mean, Walt didn't, but everybody else just lost their mind. So we all decided that it was better for us to go out and form a new organization that just did abduction research or contact research. Nothing to do with so much with sightings. I mean, we track sightings because we get them with the people that call us in for contact, but we are much more interested, you know, in why people were being taken. Was it real? Was it not real? I mean, the first person that ever told me they had been abducted by an alien, I looked at like, yes, can I bring you right straight to the nut ward? But
and this is as you were a director of MUFON?
No. This is
the first time you heard it.
Yeah, somebody just told me it was a very intelligent woman, very, very important woman in the area at the time. She was in way high up in the government, beautiful, attractive, had children, had a lot to lose. And I don't even know why she told me. I didn't even know what to say to her. I mean, I was just like, what? No, I mean, it's hard to get the emotion across because I was just like, what the hell? I was just like, no way, man. I know you. There's no way. You have been taken by aliens. She said, Joe, let me explain to you. She was about a few years older than me. And she told me some more. And I was like, there's just no way. I said, you're a nutter. I said, I know you a long time. And I hate to say it. So I didn't talk to her for a little while. So a couple of months later, I'm out in a couple other places. What the hell? I'm out in a couple other places with a friend of mine. And this lady just starts talking to me about fucking alien contact. And I was like, at this point, I'm just kind of dumbfied going, okay, 2 in like 3 months, there's something weird going on here. Some universe, something bugging me. But still, it wasn't enough. So a good friend of mine, he's been having these weird UFO sightings. He said, why don't we just join MUFON, we can track UFO sightings. Because we were both in the Navy, and everybody in the Navy, every pilot I ever met in the Navy said they saw a UFO. It still wasn't enough to get me involved, really? By the way.
Really?
Every pilot I ever talked to said, I've seen a UFO. Every pilot I've talked to since said they've seen a UFO. So we joined. We're looking around. It was about 4 or 5 months in. When I was in Washington, D.C., I'm sitting in the Washington Press Club waiting for these 2 senators to come in and give a speech about the denial of UFOs. And this woman comes and sits down next to me. Thought she was pressed. We're talking. She said, what are you here for? I said, I'm just listening for the debunk audience. I said, I work for ICON, International Community for Alien Research. And she said, really? She said, what do you do? I said, we track people who said they've had sightings. We try to find out if they're nutters or something else. She just goes off for the next 55 minutes telling me about her contact. So at this point, I'm thinking to myself, what the hell, man? There's just something going on. So that's when, I forgot who it was, one of my good friends approached me about, let's do an abduction study inside of MUFON every time someone sent a case in. Every time someone sent a case in, we could just see if we could find any similarities between other cases. So we found every case we could. not just from MUFON. We approached four or five other groups, and I think it was total about 5,000 cases, and we found similarities through about a quarter or maybe half of them.
Oh, wow.
So we were kind of like, well, this is a little weird because none of these people knew each other. So
now were the cases similar in the people that you'd heard?
Yeah, well, they had similarities in the beginning of the cases. They were similarities, but that wasn't until we got down deep that we found out things that there was a couple other things going on. So, you know, when you hear surface of contact, it's one thing. When you really get into the meat and the potatoes of what an abduction is,
yeah,
it's a different thing. So, you know, we kept asking, you know, kept asking questions and questions and questions. And since we had come up with this third of these people, it helped us to develop what we call abduction criteria. So it helped us look for keywords and things we could find that might help us move along, you know, finding people. But we couldn't rule out that it would be different cases and different experiences for different people with different types of aliens. So we didn't want to just say, hey, we don't believe you because you don't fit into this box. We just wanted this box to help us find these people. So the more we got into it, the bigger the questionnaire came. The questionnaire that's currently on the website is 150 questions. There's two reasons there. One, when you get through writing this to me or whichever director gets it, it's intense. I mean, we're going to know a lot about a lot of stuff that has to do with your life.
That's a lot of questions.
So, and one of the other reasons why is because most people who hoax won't take time to do that many questions. They just won't. But it might be stupid answers in that you know right off the bat. So it was a good way of going. But think today the organization has over 87,000 people in it that are contactees or abductees. We have no non-abduction members anymore. We used to, but we don't anymore. I'm not sure how exactly that happened. We used to have quite a few that were non-abduction members, but now it's almost all the members have been taken at one time or another in their life. And this is weeding through an ungodly amount of people. So when ICO was first formed, there was about 30 of us that started out. We were going through each probably 10, 15 cases a week each. And it was just snowballing. And we had a support group online for people. And one of the chat rooms called UFO Alien Phenomena group that we used to do support for. ICAR used to do. We still have it, by the way. And it's if somebody needed help or support or something along those lines, that they could actually be, you know, come there and get support. Well, as that came along, they brought in more cases and more cases and more cases and more cases and more directors. As a matter of fact, the station, UFO Paranormal, its first incarnation was all directors from ICAR. All of them were
really?
Directors from ICAR. Yeah, every one of them was. All 41 of the live hosts were all directors from ICAR. And all the syndicated shows had something to do with alien contact. We were like Abduction Central. And then weird stuff started happening. The hosts, five of my female hosts got breast cancer, which one of them died from. One of my very close friends, Dee Andrew, who was actually national director at the time, died from it. Three of the other ones that were working on specific reports, one was working on the reptilian, one was working on the... So November Hansen was working on the reptilian report, and she just
called me. I remember
November. Yeah, November's a great person too. She's a school teacher. I still have a lot of respect for her. She just calls me one night. I can't do it, Joe. I think it's related. And she sent it back to me, lock, stock, and barrel, and went into remission. And the other two did the same thing, and they went into remission.
Mm.
So whether it was or not, I couldn't tell you. It was also creepy, weird. Even though the reports did get finished, they got refinished by other people, which, by the way, all three are dead now. before anybody thinks of conspiracy, really, they were all older people who did these reports. Oh, I'm, you know, I'm pretty old myself these days, but they were a good 20 years old. So they would be in their 80s now.
Wow.
So it wasn't one guy died of a heart attack. He had heart problems his whole life, his last 40 years of his life, and it wasn't unexpected. The other lady did die from cancer, but she had been fighting it for 7 or 8 years. So it wasn't stuff that I would immediately say had anything to do with the reports. But they and when I say finish, it's not a good word. So ICAR has, if you ever go to our website, you'll notice we have a lot of different programs running. None of them ever close, not even the blood type studies. None of it closes. These are lifetimes. As long as I'm alive, as long as that site exists and other directives, because what I did was I paid for the site, so the site's currently paid up for 40 years, so even if I cloak over, it's going to be up for a longer time. So I made a deal with the company to keep it up there, and I made a deal with Google to keep it up if something goes up. So this way, the information can still be shared with people, the directors can still have access to it, and it'll keep growing. Because when we first started the blood type study, it was 500 people, and it was 36,000 people.
Oh,
It's
wow.
well over 100,000 now between the four different branches we use to get the information from.
Now, this
So
blood, let me interrupt you real quick. This blood type study, what is the study about? Are you seeing what blood type certain like contactees have? Is that
well, you know what we were talking about earlier, when we do things like comparison studies, we're looking for things like you find an induction, like the color blue sometimes comes up in certain types of inductions. And now we know what it is. We didn't know back then, but we know what it is. And there's other things that happen in cases that you hear about and you kind of wonder. So I needed a way because the field agrees that probably 96 to 98% of people being taken will never know they're being taken. So how can I get a full report when I can't get hold of these people?
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I got a lot of cases now. I mean, if you didn't see what happened to ICAR was before we get into blood type study. So ICAR started out with a couple hundred members and made a couple thousand members and got to do coast to coast, picked up another couple of thousand, another coast to coast, another thousand. And then a grew out of Peru called me. They had about 7,000 members. They just joined and merged with us. We had another two, actually two. We had one out of Brazil and one out of Argentina joined with us from South America. Boom, all of a sudden that added almost another 21,000 to the
Wow.
closest we had. So that jumps us up to finish. And then we get another group out of Madrid, which was about 11,000. They joined us. So we just had these groups. We started merging. We went from a bunch of little organizations to one big ass organization now.
How
And
large is it?
well, caseload membership is weird. So caseload is 105,000 documented cases. Current membership is
Wow.
87,380. And now, how many are active? Don't ask me. I couldn't tell you. It varies from month to month and year to year. So,
Yeah.
and I do know this because from the lady who originally built the site, which was quite a long time ago, if a person's inactive too long, it takes them out of the count. So I couldn't even tell you how many have been taken out of the count. That's just where we're currently sitting right now. All of these cases have been investigated either by us or by people we know or trust. Somebody said, "Well, that's insane. How can you do that, man?" I said, "Well, I've done quite a few cases myself." I said, "Even if you just figure one investigation a week, you're doing 52 a year times, 10,000 members. How is that? 50,000 cases." So it's not, people take it the wrong way. They think one person's doing them all. And I understand that because I get the majority of cases that's sent to me. But like I tell people, I can't do everybody's case.
Yeah.
I'm the mouthpiece for the organization. I do a lot of cases because it's something I have a big interest in. But and I'm the one that set the groundwork for the blood type study and some of the other studies. But still, and when you come right down to it, it's just one of me, and I got two other jobs plus this one, so it's not like I can go through that many. So what happens now is I look at particular types of cases, and we'll get to that after a while. But each director has its own state to deal with and its own local stuff to deal with, and just like each country director does, we have 11 directors in India now. They have a pretty big payload of their own, and to be honest with you, we haven't actually brought the Indian load into the organization yet. So
So that's not
I
even
know
part
that,
of the 80 some thousand.
yeah, no, they haven't been brought in yet, and they're going to be a pretty high number when they come in.
No, I'd
It's
say.
yeah, well, it was set up like that originally because they are ICAR members, but we don't count them yet because they're still separate, and we're going to do that for a while. I think we're going to keep certain countries separate for a while, and if we need to for some reason, we can always say this ICAR, that ICAR, this ICAR, and then they can all be together. But right now, I think it's just working better for us this way. We're not crossing over too many cases, and about every 4 or 5 years, everybody can get together and do a cross case study. We've got this many, y'all got this many of this kind, this kind, this kind. What are you seeing here? What are you seeing here? And it helps. It helps bring in more information because there's a lot of information in this, a lot more than people realize. But the blood type study, we're sitting around trying to figure out how can I find abductees or contactees. I said the 50 questionnaire thing is pretty good. It helps you to, and 150 is even better, and that helps with locating, but you still got to get people to that. So instead of doing that, I figured out maybe I can find out a way to get people interested if I talk about certain things.
Okay.
So I was noticing one night at a particular dinner in DC, I was doing a matter of fact, I was there speaking for Stephen Bissett, and I was sitting at a table with a group of contactees, about 15 of them, and I noticed that one of them had brown eyes. And I was like, Well, that's kind of weird because Paradise makes up about 80-85% of the population. Yeah. Back by far less. That's been recent. It's made those kind of booms. But so for shits and giggles, I started asking about their blood type. I said, if you don't feel comfortable, don't tell me. Well, about 65% of them are Rh negative. I was like, wait, what? So immediately when I get back to Louisiana, I get on a freaking phone with everybody. Oh, actually, I got online with everybody. I said, look, I want to launch a blood type study. I want you to go through every file we got because it is part of the application, what blood type, what eye color you have. And I said, I want you to go through and find out how many positive, how many negatives we got, what color eyes we got. So I knew that was going to be a big one. That was going to take some time. At that time, I think we had somewhere around 45,000 cases. Then we put a thing on the website for anybody who was, you know, we made it where you can only vote once because I'm not a real trusting sort. But I said, for anybody who thinks they've been taken or contacted or whatever, can you please tell me your blood type and your eye color? That's currently at around 65,000-70,000 people, which, by the way, correlates with the applications, which happen to be about 65% Rh negative. So then I contacted two other organizations we work with, and then one's a scientific organization out of Australia. Their caseload was around 65%. Then I contacted a European group, and I said, where are y'all sitting at? And they're saying, we're sitting at around 65% Rh negative. So then we just went ahead, all of us, full-blown, went crazy, and just put it out to everywhere we could find out. And people just started coming in and coming in and coming in and coming in, and we kept finding more and more people that were Rh negative, green or blue eye, Rh negative, green or blue eye. So in the ICAR caseload, not just ours, in all the groups we represent, 50% of all contactees have green or blue eyes.
Wow.
Now, in the world, it's only 20%, but it's really only about 10 because they lumped a bunch of other shit in there with it. But 65% of everybody in all of these applications were Rh negative. 65%. Actually, and recently that was updated to about 68%. Now, let's be honest. Rh negative people make up 15% of the world's population. That's it. 15%.
Really?
Yeah, that's all they make up. And that started only about 45,000 years ago, so they're kind of moving up kind of fast.
All right, well, I'm going to ask a question real quick before you get into that, because I'm going to pretend that I'm asking this for my listeners and not the fact that I just don't know. Rh negative, is that like if you're O negative? Is that what that means?
So Rh negative, okay. It's Rh positive and Rh negative. Now, if you're Rh positive, you're O positive or A positive, AB positive or B positive, that's all four of those, or all eight of those, I should say.
I'm O positive,
negative. So you're O negative. So you're definitely an alien inductee. All your kids, all your wife is, your dog is, and everybody else. So you might as well just not even worry about it. And I'm serious. You think I'm playing with you? I'm being serious. It's you might as well just join, especially O negative, man. There ain't no doubt you might. With it. I knew that was the reason I liked you, but so now people don't get offended. Okay, Rh negative people do not share the Reese's monkey with the Rh positive people. We are monkey free genes. Okay, I just want to let y'all know.
So would you say we're better than those people?
Yes, we are much better. Oh, okay. But anyway, y'all didn't hear that on the radio. Shh, before y'all start writing the doors, we're gonna hang you and stuff.
I'm gonna get so much hate mail now.
So, but it's funny because science can't explain where Rh negative came from. So I actually brought three hematologists in on this. It took me forever to talk them into this too, because as soon as I brought up the word alien abductee, they were like, so big, you don't do that with that. So I said, look, guys, then explain to me what the hell this is. I said, I said, maybe this is some kind of disease that these type of people get, and maybe this is a symptom of it. And then they got interested. They're like, well, that could possibly be. So they got together, they put these maps together. They're still on the website today. Great maps of the world's population, which has changed a little bit since then, but still, great map. I mean, we studied everything that could possibly be. So Rh negative showed up on the planet somewhere between 25,000 and 45,000 years ago. Nobody knows why. Remember, in the old days, for all you young and y'all didn't know this, but for the older people, remember when you used to have to get a marriage license and have to, you know why? Because you had to have a blood test. Because if you were Rh positive, Rh negative, you probably couldn't have children together. The children would probably be stillborn. Ooh. So why would Mother Nature kill something that kills babies? Her job is to procreate, not to kill things. So So why would you have created something when all of a sudden start downgrading the human population? That doesn't quite make sense. Well, somewhere along the line, I think in the 60s, might have been 50s, but I think it was in the 60s, somebody invented the antidenazine gene. They said it came from a guy in Australia. They found the gene in some guy in Australia. Now, once that gene came along, you need blood tests anymore, because if you are Rh negative or Rh positive, they could just give you a shot and you could still have the baby. Okay. Well, it's interesting in place how all that happened, but man had to fix Mother Nature, which is a little bit strange. But there's more of a method to this madness. O negative is the universal donor.
Yeah.
So now we're the second rarest form of blood, but really we're the rarest, and I'll tell you why. AB negative and AB positive is only 1.5%, but guess what? They can take Rh negative blood. We can't take their blood. We can't take anybody's blood but our own. That's it. There is no universal donor for Rh negative. You are 7% of the world's population, and the only bastard that can save your life is someone else that's Rh negative. And remember, they only make 7% of 7.5 billion.
Wow.
So it's like a needle in a haystack almost. But yet, that 7% can save millions and millions of lives. Figure that one out. And then on top of that, all of the world's hemological research comes from O negative, because you know why? It's the purest form of blood known to man. So somewhere along the line, Mother Nature, God, or extraterrestrial, I don't know who it was, somebody introduced this into our society 45,000 years ago. And remember, then it was 1%, and now it's 15%. It's growing. When this started, when all this started 45,000 years ago, there was no green eyes, no blue eyes, and no Rh negative. It was Rh positive. Everybody was brown-eyed, brown-haired pretty much. After the mutation was entered, which is the Rh negative, that's the mutation. Once that entered, then we started having blue eyes, blonde hair, green eyes. That entered into our society. But before that, we were a rather boring group of people. So now we have a mutation. It's a mutation you can see. You can look at people's eye colors and see, oh, wow, look. Well, they're a mutant of some kind because, you know, especially if they got Rh negative blood and blue or green eyes, you're a mutant. Just know it, people.
What about a green hazel?
Hey, look, if it's not brown, you're a mutant, buddy. That's all I can tell. And today, brown still makes up about 85% of the world's population. And green and blue are still only around 6%. They add in a couple other colors to make it dim, but they all come from the same colors. Why do you think in China and India, green and blue eyes is such a oh my God, where'd that come from? I mean, their eyes, they make up 4 billion, well, they make up 3.5 billion people. And their eyes are almost brown black. They're so dark.
Yeah.
And they're not just them. Go to the Middle East or even to Africa or even South America. So about 6 billion, 7 billion people a day still have those dark brown eyes. And the rest of us don't. It's a weird thing. And you kind of wonder why. And then, so that helps us to track contact. These are, once we post statistics, you know, you're like 75% more likely to be taken by aliens or have been taken by aliens if you have these characteristics. So people would start writing in and telling us about weird events that happened to them. Some people just wanted to be hypnotized. Some of the people turned out to be abductees. It increased our database significantly. And once we got it on places like Coast to Coast and other places, it really increased our thing, because people are like, well, wait a minute, there's something going on here. Now, something else for y'all to think about while we're on this subject. When you're watching TV, I want you to pay close attention and see how many brown-eyed people you see.
Okay.
Versus blue or green-eyed. You're going to be amazed that the majority of people you see on television are blue or green-eyed, but it gets worse.
Uh-huh.
About half of all our politicians are blue or green-eyed. There's something going on here. This particular Rh negative group that seem to be more aggressive, faster, smarter, brighter, and more in an upward movement than the others. You figure that out. This is all fact.
So is a lighter color eye, I mean, I know this isn't a science show, but lighter color eyes are all negative blood?
No, they can be positive. It's usually a throw off from the family somewhere, but if you go far enough back in the family, you're going to find that it is a throw off from an Rh negative. It's because they didn't exist before Rh negative did. That's the problem. You know, in science, once they try to argue, they try, but even they are kind of like, no. And it's always funny to me because, you know, one of the things we were taught in school way back in when is eventually we will all become this sandy brown-haired, brown-eyed, brown-skinned, light brown-skinned society. in the future. Well, if that's the case, that's where we came from. So we're going backwards. I'm confused, man. I'm confused. Because, you know, when you listen back, if you go back, like if you go back to Cro-Magnon and Neanderthal, they were all dark skin, dark head, dark eye. That was just part of living back then. Even coming forward for 1.5 million years, it was still the same thing. And you don't have to believe me, people. I can just look around the world. I mean, look at India, look at China, look at the Middle East, look at South America, look at Africa.
Which are all large countries, you know, with
heavily populated. With dark skin, dark eyes, and dark hair. And it's just a thing. You don't get mad at me. It's not something I'm making up here. It's just one of those things. And then somewhere along the line, some shining light, maybe it was God, said the color was a little boring. Let's change it. Maybe E.T. needed to introduce something in, or maybe Mother Nature figured she needed to brighten things up. But somewhere along the line, we were given Rh negative, and Rh negative changed a lot of things. It's a benefit to our society in more ways than even science likes to admit to. It's just one of those things that we're kind of like. So we stumbled across all of that because we were doing research on extraterrestrials. Now, another weird thing for y'all. So Central and South America, and I make people look this up all the time, is 98% O blood. How can that be?
Really?
Oh, yeah. How can that be? And that's a fact. It's science. Remember, people, I do science and beyond, which one's a reward and was going to win a big one. So I don't play around with science. I was like, what? I was confused. And the maps, matter of fact, the maps are still in the iCloud site from the original hematologist that posted them there. So you can go looking for yourself and see what they are. It's a strange, weird phenomena. So I was thinking, well, how can that be? Because I know the conquistadors went down there and raped and pillaged the whole entire time they were there. So what are you telling me? Everybody from Spain was O blood? Because we know everybody from South America apparently was. It's a weird thing that it's like that. But if you come into Mexico, United States, Canada, it's just what it's supposed to be. 37% O negative, 36% O positive, 38% A positive, 34% O A negative. It's the right proportions it's supposed to be, like it is in most of the world. But by the way, people, you can go look around, and you will notice there are clusters of types of blood types in certain countries and certain areas. It's an interesting thing to see. And there's a lot to that because after the blood type study, we launched two of the DNA studies. One was just to see where you were from, and one was to learn about your health history. And you'd be amazed at shit we found. Excuse my language, I slipped out. But you would be amazed. I'm telling you, it was amazing the things we found. We're pretty sure we can find out probably where the original abductees' families came from. Or at least the big clusters of groups where they came from that come into today's society. It's a weird, weird thing. And then we know because of stuff of clusters in Wales, Scotland, Ireland, England. We know that's another big cluster group. We also know a lot of colored eyes and Rh negative came from there. So it's all this stuff points to a lot of things. The further you go back, the weirder it gets. But there was definitely something going on in our past that we have no idea about.
Yeah.
Something changed. I mean, how can you have? And what's weird about it is, okay, so that means the Toltecs, the Mayans, the Incans, and the Aztecs all shared the same blood. I guess they were all descendants of the same tribe. Because all of that, until you get into Mexico, it's different. It's all the same blood. It's a weird thing. It makes you wonder about what was going on in our past to where we are today. And then you have to think today. There's places you can go read about the difference in personalities between Rh negative people and Rh positive people. There's actually been big studies done on this. I didn't know that until about a decade ago. It's a different group of people.
Now, with somebody your website, says, what is your website so folks can look at this?
It is www.icar1.com. Yeah, real easy. I like keeping everything easy. But there's so much of this. And then, as a matter of fact, y'all let me know about bad links because they've been working out old links with new ones over there. Somebody was griping at me about it last week. I don't do the website anymore, so you got to let me know when y'all see something. Somebody else does it. But it's there's a lot of good material there, and there's always new stuff being added. Matter of fact, right now, the whole organization and the website, everything's in flux because we retired a few directors, about 12, 14, actually about 16 of them. What we do when we retire directors, that just means they're burnt out. so we retire them until further notice. You know, it happens. So we do this a lot. We do this a lot. It's like anything else. It's like Travis Walton being asked to hear about a story by the 1 millionth person. He probably wants to reach out and just choke them out. It's so, you know, it does happen to the best of everybody, and I'm lucky because I got a lot of diverse things in my life, so I can kind of split it up. But still, it's things. And just because you're Rh negative, people, doesn't mean you're an alien, unless you're O negative, and then that just means you're an alien. But the rest of you Rh negative people, there's a 65% chance. But for you O negative people, oh man, it's too late. It's just too late. Y'all are just aliens in disguise.
And if you're a green-eyed O negative, you're done for.
I'm green-eyed O negative. Shut up. Just be quiet, man, before you get them coming for it. You know what's funny about this? You know, I kid around about this a lot, but a good friend of mine the other day said, you need to stop that. He said, why? I said, you're going to get these people persecuted. I'm like, why? He said, Joe, you're making them sound way better than the rest of us. I said, well, they are. He's like, you see what I mean?
God.
He said, they're going to be coming for with pitchforks and rifles and stuff. I'm like, oh, please, no. I said, it was just funny. But and obviously, we hadn't had no green-eyed presidents lately because we got a bunch of morons been running the country for 16 years now, 18 years now, 28 years. I don't know how long it's been. I lost count.
Now, here's a question. Here's a question, Joe. So now that you've unloaded that huge bit of information about, you know, our listeners possibly being abductees, what are some signs that they should look for? Because now they're all having like this inner monologue, like, was I abducted? What about that one dream I had? What about that feeling that I had? You know, what should they look for? What should they be thinking about? Should they cry?
Well, don't, you know, cry, but don't shake off weird experiences when you know they're weird. A lot of people, especially contactees who don't want to know, something will happen to them, like they'll gain a little time or they'll miss a little time or something just weird will come out and they'll just play it off as, oh, I didn't see that or that just didn't happen. Don't do that. Write down your dreams in the morning. I'll tell you a little secret about writing dreams down. You're not going to find out anything immediately, but if you write them down over 6 months, a year, 2 years, you'll be amazed at stuff that comes out in them. It's just stuff you'll just be writing, and some stuff that'll just help you that has nothing to do with what we're talking about right now, but still, a lot of times this will manifest itself first in dreams. There's other ways it manifests itself, but if you start having screwy time, whether it's missed time, gain time, or just weird time, talk to somebody in the field. If you get hold to us, it's better because we understand the time thing better, but there are other people in the field too, so just talk to somebody in the field because more than likely you got something weird going on in your life. And it's not always going to be aliens. Sometimes it may be something paranormal. Well, I shouldn't even say it like that because paranormal, everything we're talking about is paranormal. So
yeah.
Let me rephrase that. For the outsider, everything tonight is paranormal. For the insider, it's just a regular, normal part of our lives. So it's a weird thing for me when I say paranormal because it means something different to me. But especially if you get a lot of game time, a lot of this time, like, so deja vu is a weird thing. So
I get deja vu all the time.
So yeah, because deja vu means you were put back before you left. So somebody takes you and they take you, they can put you in a little pocket universe or however you do, pocket dimension. They do whatever they do. Could be hours, days, weeks, as far as you know. They drop you back, usually a few minutes before they take you. So you get this weird sense of, well, it's like a deja vu, like you're reliving a moment. Because you just remember standing there looking at the clock or looking at the TV or looking at whatever you happen to be looking at. And you feel awkward and weird because you look at your watch or you look at the time and nothing's really passed. I'm going to tell you a little secret. In the old days, missing time was a big thing amongst abductions. ET's not stupid. It's not the only thing they changed either. And we were the first organization to even bring this up. And this made so many people feel mad at me, you wouldn't even believe. Well, ET knows what missing time is. So, you know, they said, well, we don't have to let them have missing time. We can fix just the way this, they don't have any missing time at all. That was a big key. Remember in the old days, missing time was a big deal. If you had a lot of missing time, you had been taken. It still happens some today, but just not as much as it used to. Now it's more like even time or gain time. So it'll usually be for a few minutes, a few moments, you just feel awkward or weird or out of sort or like you don't belong or something's weird about time. But when you look at the clock, it's right. Or it's 10 minutes earlier, 15 minutes earlier than the last time you looked at it. And you're like, wait, what? No, I must have looked at it wrong. And you just play that off because you're like, oh, there's no way it could be 15 minutes earlier than the left because, you know, it's physically impossible in our dimension or in our science. So you just play it off. You play it off. And if you do that, you're missing key things. See, as soon as you know that, you get hold of somebody and you start working through about other things in your life, other feelings you've had, other acts that might have been going on. So that'll bring out other stuff, and then you get to a point where you may almost get to the edge. You can have somebody hypnotize you and get the rest out. But again, big warning about hypnosis. Once you take the genie out at the bottle, she ain't going back in it. So once that dream is in your head, you're stuck with that. There's no way to get it out of there. You could have maybe a really good hypnotherapist maybe using sodium anethol with a little sodium pentothal that could maybe distract your brain enough that they could give you a false memory, but that's iffy skiffy.
All right, so I got to tell you a story, Joe.
Yeah.
All right, so we evacuated. This is when we were living down in Myrtle Beach. We evacuated a hurricane. This was a few years ago. We evacuated up to Wheeling, West Virginia, where we're at now. So we came up here. Now, from Wheeling to Charleston is probably 3.5 hours, right? Charleston, West Virginia. So we were driving back home, and I think we stopped to go to the bathroom. The kids had to go to the bathroom. We stopped, and then we made it to Charleston, right? Maybe with a stop, you would think 4 hours, right? We were 3 hours past our time when we made it to Charleston. Okay, 3 hours. And we stop, and we were intentional, like we were stopping for lunch is what we were doing. And again, it's only like a 3.5 hour drive. We go into just a fast food joint, and we go, and Sarah and I are like, man, it's been like, where, what happened? Like we both acknowledged the 3 hours. So we're leaving the fast food place, and there is a cop sitting, you know, by the exit. And he looks at us, he says, you guys have a great trip back to the beach. And we walked out, and we're like, what?
Yeah, I say what?
Like, how? One, we're in West Virginia. How do they know we're going to the beach, right? We didn't have on beach clothes. Our car didn't have beach decals. And you couldn't even see the car from where we were, you know, that anybody would have seen that. But that was a pretty crazy. What was that?
They might have got you. See, did you pass through any tunnels? Because, you know, Virginia and West Virginia, and I got to tell you, man, we left D.C. I don't know if we was in Virginia or West Virginia. We went through this tunnel, and we came out of the tunnel going the way we came into the tunnel. You figure that one out. So we were headed south, and when we came out, we were headed north. And I was like, what? I still remember Gia going, it's been like 3 hours. What the hell's going on here? Literally. So that made me wonder if it was Uncle Sam snatching us.
See, and that's, you know, what about the officer? What was the officer?
Could have been a cover memory. They might have been there making sure the memory stayed put. Could have been an illusion. Could have just been a thing that could have just been a thing to remind you. So I tell these contactees all the time, the reason they can see UFOs is because they've been taken. Anybody who sees a UFO has definitely been someone who's been taken. They don't like hearing that, but it's the truth. If not, it'd be four more mini UFO sightings in the United States because, like, perfect example, Phoenix, Arizona. How many people live in Phoenix, Arizona?
Yeah.
2 million, 3 million. So this thing flew over for quite a long time. How many people seen it? 20,000, 30,000?
You're talking about the Phoenix lights?
Yeah, talking about the Phoenix lights. Hardly anybody's seen it compared to how many people live there. Mexico City, UFO hovered over the city for 24 hours. 1.1 million people seen it, but 22 million people live there. Why another 19 million people? Not just there, New York City. When the ambassador and his two security guards see the UFO taking a woman out the window. Busy street, tons of people everywhere, nobody else seen it. You got to wonder why, because people who have been taken have a they're just, for some reason or another, it allows them to see it. But I've always called it reminder memories. A lot of people call them cover memories. I call them trigger memories.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason, in old days they used to come, but I understand it better now. So it's not about covering it up. It's about triggering the memory. So if you're one of them nutters who can't take this, they blot it out. You don't remember anything. But if you're somebody that may have expressed an interest or maybe not freaked out or kind of was like, wow, you know, it looks kind of cool. As long as you're not hurting my kids, I'm okay. You know, so some people like that, they want them to remember because you can go out there and talk and you can be more productive on the ships and you can be more involved and you can be learning. You might be one of the ones they decide to keep in the end. And because they physically have the ability to take your consciousness out and upload it into a new body like they do their own. So it's a weird progression, but they want you to remember. So they do trigger memory. They'll give you a memory that you have to question, that bugs the crap out of you. It makes you dig into it, look into it, try to find out what it was, try to find answers for it. Eventually, something will click somewhere, or there'll be another one. In the old days, it was always like reindeer or foxes or squirrels or raccoons sitting on your windowsill or owls, stuff like that. But those are still trigger memories. They weren't cover memories. They were trigger memories. Oh, they did that. No, if they didn't want you to remember, they just would have put you back in the bed and you'd have woke up later on. You wouldn't have thought anything.
Yeah.
The fact that they gave you something to look at was a trigger that something happened to you. Oh, and it makes me feel crazy when I even want to talk about it today. I'm like, why, guys? It's a much better explanation than what you idiots came up with. It's because that's exactly what it is. It's a trigger. Well, it's because it's what it is. And they want to try to use it to cover something up when it's trying to show you that there's something there. And now they're much different. They're usually something different. You know, it's usually something that makes you triggery, jumpy. A lot of times it's cops. You know what else we found out by accident? That a lot of people's spirit guides were aliens. That was. I don't know if it was disappointing.
Spirit guides, what do you mean by that?
Well, people tell me they have like an Indian guide or a dragon guide or a wolf guide or a dog guide or whatever that walks with them and helps them through life and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Personally, I haven't had one myself, so I'm not criticizing, but
okay.
A lot of the people we've talked to under hypnosis, it turned out to be a freaking extraterrestrial, usually a gray. So, you know, and it's weird because they get really upset when the face shifts. So they're talking to me about the spirit guide and how the spirit guide's walking them through and keep them safe from these aliens, and then all of a sudden it's like the spirit Indian guide melts away and there's the gray. And I can understand being upset by it. You know, that's why I tell people, be really careful when you get hypnotized, because if it's something real going on, it's going to be hard on you later on because you're going to have to deal with it. It's just like any other post-traumatic syndrome. It's something that's happened to you that you're going to have to deal with. But they are doing it because they do think that you could be useful to them or useful to yourself. And if all the researchers understood that, there'd be less damage to the individuals. See, it's not so much that doing the damage. I mean, they're doing their damage automatically, but we're the ones that cause damage too. When we misdiagnose it, or we tell them this or tell them that, and it's not true, they're trying to give it out. The best thing you can do if you find that you've been taken is incorporate it in your life and make it part of your life. Just live with it. Live with the downloads, live with everything. Once you do that, it just becomes a natural part of your life. You don't feel any different. You're going through life. Usually it's a benefit. Usually you'll get information you can use, or you know, you become very empathic and you can help. I use it all the time. You know, I'm extremely empathic, and it's something that comes in handy for me. Let me just alien rate. I'm not going to be born empathic, doofus. How do you know? Sorry, I was writing something. But
now, Joe, let me ask you this, because before, you know, you had said, okay, the first time somebody told me they were abducted, I thought, you know, she was a nutter and needed to be locked up. But now you are that person, right?
But I am a nutter, so. See, I'm proving my own point here, man. I'm proving my own damn point here. It's a sad double standard, but it's even today, though, when people call me, sometimes I just think they're nutters. I'm like, come on, you cannot expect me to believe it. Well, here's a perfect example. See, I don't know if you know who Charles Hall is.
No.
Charles Hall is a good old guy, okay? He's a real nice guy. I met him a long time ago. I don't think he does interviews anymore, but he used to work out at Area 53. He was the weather guy, basically. And so he was working out there for a while. He was in Vietnam and all kind of other stuff. And anyway, long story short, he started working out at Area 53 for the government. being a meteorologist. So one day he was out there, he seen something weird, looked kind of strange off in the distance. He wasn't sure. Reported it to the guy, nobody paid any attention to it. This happened a couple of times. And then about a 12th trip out there, they came a lot closer, freaking out really good from what he said to. He said that he was just, it just freaked him out hard. And so he went back and reported it, and they introduced him to them. So this was a group of aliens that still are out in Area 53. The government gave them a place. They parked there. They're jumping between galaxies. And this is just a stopover where they can refuel, bring in parts. They give us a little bit of technology in exchange for that, letting them have a base on a planet. They have nothing to do with the Greys, the reptilians, the humans. They have nothing to do with any of the programs running on the planet. They're just basically here at pit stopping is basically what they are.
Okay.
So the first time he told me about this case, he told me they had been seen in Las Vegas gambling. I was like, what? So I'm like, wait, do what? They're gambling? And he's like, yeah. He said they used to take them, they would put them in clothes and drive them out there and bring them into the casinos and let them gamble because, you know, they would get bored hanging around and shit. I'm like, come on now. This is getting crazy. So he went through all three of his new books with me. We talked and talked about it. And then one afternoon, I get a call from a state trooper from Las Vegas. He starts telling me about these tall, weird white aliens with these glasses, and they're real tall, and their skin is real pale. And he said, I heard your show, and I'm telling you, that's who they are.
Oh.
And I was like, wait, what? And I was, so I didn't know what to make of it, but he was definitely a state trooper. A couple of weeks later, two different cab drivers call me. Well, I should say limo drivers, they weren't cab drivers. Telling me about these weird things that were in the call with him. A month later, another state trooper calls me. I'm like, okay, I'm flying out to fucking Vegas. Get on an airplane and fly out to Vegas and meet with all of them. These are both troopers on the edge of retirement. They couldn't be 2 years left each to retire. I'm thinking, why would you even tell me this? I go public with this. Your retirement is... I think you're just done. And the limo driver, I can understand, but so I asked all of them, are you willing to undergo voice dressing now? So all four of them said yes. I said, all five of them said yes. I was like, what?
Wow.
So I voice dressed two of them. They both passed with flying colors. I was like, what the hell is going on here? That I said, I'm missing something in all of this. You know, I said, there's something going on. I'm missing something. And because I thought the guy was lying to me. Let me rephrase that. I didn't think he was lying to me. I think he had convinced himself is what I thought.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But more and more, I was getting more information. So, you know, over the years, I've made some pretty good connections in the government. I've made some good connections in Boeing and Lockheed. Because of my ultra-high, crazy, high security clearance, I got from time to time, they'll tell me shit because they know I can't go public with it. So I started asking questions. And a friend of mine who worked out, they worked out at one of the WIC facilities where they destroyed nuclear waste. Well, she had a friend at Los Alamos, so she gave them a call. Long story short, they verified that they were out there through another friend of theirs that were working in Area 53. I was like, this reminds me of one of them mother, you know, in the old days when the grandma would call her mom and the mom would call her aunt. But they usually she's pretty good. She got me other information from other places. Well, she's the one who sent this Bob Lazar's work record.
Okay, I'm familiar with him.
Yeah, Los Alamos, had him listed as manager. Yeah, I bet you don't want anybody talking about that. We still have the documents today. We're going to release it after you get out of it. With no reason to be mean to the guy. But yeah, she had sent them to me. And we talked about it on the air a couple of times. But it never said he was stationed at Area 51. And it said that he was listed formerly at the Los Alamos Laboratory as a janitor. They actually had a different name for it, but it meant janitor. I was like, well, that's interesting. Yeah, you know, what can you do? Sometimes you learn stuff about people. But that means, you know, maybe he's a janitor at Area 51. Who knows?
Yeah, you never know what they
say. Or maybe falsified the documents. When you get into this world, you just never know what you're going to run across.
Or what to believe.
You know, yeah, but we've met lots of people, and thanks to Stephen Bissett, I met quite a few people in D.C. I made connections with quite a few aides that got me connections. Then I met, I forgot who told me about it, but I met Senator McDonald, rest in peace. He called me about seeing a black triangle. This was such a fun, I got to tell you, so this guy calls me up on the phone, right? He says, this is Senator McDonald, 25-year incumbent senator, blah, 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 blah. I see, I hopped up on him. I'm like, really? Come on. Really? There's no senator calling me, no, especially no incumbent in charge of security. Security. Well, why would he call me? There's just no way. And a couple of days later, I get a knock on my door with a vanilla envelope. I open the envelope, and there's a copy and a paper of his driver's license and his congressional ID. And I was like, no, this is fake bullshit. I'm just not buying it. So phone call comes. I said, who is this? Stop with this fake ass shit. Just stop it. And I said, stop. And anyway, but 2 weeks pass, I hear. I go to the door. There's two guys in these really nice Armani suits, about 6'2", got their hands. I'm like, oh, man. I'm in trouble now. So I just look at both these guys. I'm like, I'm thinking, should I make a run for my gun or should I just see what's going on? And he said, the senator would like to see you. I'm like, oh, man, they're taking me out. Oh, no, man, I'm praying.
This is how it ends right now.
I said, so they open. He opens the door. I get in there. And sure enough, the senator's sitting there. And I'm just speechless. And that's, come on, guys, that's rare for me to ever be speechless. And I'm like,
you're in like your flannel PJ pants.
You know, yeah, and he starts talking to me, and like, he said, look, I was told that you would know what these were. He gives me a picture. I said, it's a TR-3B. I said, Boeing's building it for the U.S. government. I said, if you like, I'll even tell you the girls in charge of security for the thing. And I gave her a name. And he said, well, I'm in charge of the intelligence committee and for military, right? I said, yes, sir, I know who you are. And he said, well, if I find out any of this is true, I will write back to you and definitely let you know and give you whatever information I can. He said, I looked you up. And he said, then he looks right at me and he goes, and he said, your security clearance is off the chart. He said, would you like to tell me what you did? I said, no, it's still classified. He said, and he just looked at me like, okay. Every time when someone sees, like when the FBI sees the guy from the FBI seeing a security clearance, he was like, what the hell did you do? Were you like 007 system? And it's not. People, when they see this thing, they always think I'm like some super secret spy or I know aliens or whatever. It had nothing to do with it. It's just, when I was in the Navy, I worked in some critical places. Yeah. I was in the reactor, a nuclear carrier. I got permission to go on a conning tower, which is the bridge of the carrier. I was a plane captain on the deck who was in charge of making sure all the planes got launched, all the weapons got done. And then I was an electronics expert. I was an AEAT advanced, which was avionics electronics expert is what I was. I got to go on the submarines when they used to come every now and then. A submarine would just pull up inside. They'd send me down there to go do work on it. It was just, I had to have the clearance. And that was so funny. My captain, one day they're having lunch, he walks in, he wants to talk to him about something in his cabin. He said, you can go places I can't.
Wow.
Because he wasn't allowed to go on the bridge of the submarine, but I was. He was like, how can that even be? And it aggravated him. And not just him. There was other people I ran into. But I still remember I was doing a job for a guy after Katrina. He calls me up. He said, I'm going to talk to you. He's an FBI expert, forensics expert. He calls me up. He goes, before I let you work at my house, I got a question for you. I was like, what? He said, first off, I noticed the FBI does you a background search every 4 years. And he said, it writes up here above chart security. What the hell does that mean? I said, it just means that y'all don't have the knowledge to know what the hell my security clearance is for. He's like, really? I was like, yeah, really. He's like, okay, well, you go and do the house now. Every now and then I'll run across it. Somebody will, you know, run a background check on me for some reason, and it'll pop up. Or when I was applying for my permit for my concealed, they said, you don't need a permit. And she said, you don't need anything. She said, shit, it looks like you're carrying a plane if you went down to bar warehouse. And I said, yeah, but still, I still want to apply and get it. She's like, really? I'm like, yeah. I said, that way I don't have to listen to y'all go through the charts for an hour to find out what kind of clearance I got. And he says, I'd rather do it that way. But it was funny. The first time they ever did it, it was really funny. It was really spooky. But you know, when I came home, I remember the first time I came home and leave, all my friends were like, what the hell did you do? Did you know the FBI came to our house? Man, I mean, they went to everybody's house. Everybody I knew.
Wow.
They do everything. It wasn't know about me, buddy.
Yeah, I've heard they do like a really big check like that.
Oh, God. They went to all my family members, friends, all kind of stuff. They asked them what kind of drugs I did, what kind of alcohol I drank, how party, what your party animal was. And they asked all kind of questions, who I was sleeping with. I was like, apparently they cleared it. Because I know they never held me back from working on what I worked on. And don't get me wrong, the Navy's a great place, but that's another weird thing. See, it was like my life was being pushed into this. Because when I was aboard the Nimitz, I still remember, I'm sitting on deck one day with about eight pilots. And they're bored. They're tapping their feet, waiting, because we're doing stop and go all day, which means they land, they stop. They don't actually land. They just touch and go, touch and go.
Yeah.
And each pilot go up so many times. So I'm sitting there with them, and they're bored. They start talking about UFO stories. Every pilot, didn't matter who it was. Half the deckmen had seen stuff. I was like, what the? I mean, it was insane how many people on board the ship had seen stuff.
Yeah.
It was just insane. And then when I got out of the service, well, the other weird part was I went to go see a friend of mine in San Antonio, Texas. He was guarding B-52 bombers. And so I walk up to him and said, you know, if you cross the line, I got to shoot you. I said, I'm not crossing no damn line. Just calm down. And so we're sitting there talking, and these two officers come up and want to know who I am. I told them who I am and where I stationed. And I said, no, I was just talking to see if y'all ever see weird, like, UFO. Oh, man, look. We went and sat down, line shagged. They ordered some food up. They must have told me a million UFO stories. They had half the Air Force pilots in the damn place in there. And these are high. I mean, these B-52 pilots, they got clearances like I had.
Yeah.
You can't play with these guys. I don't know. It was weird. The whole thing was a weird way to. I was only 18 at the time, 19, 20, and it was like, what the hell am I doing about anything, man? But then when I got out, all these people was like, I mean, every turn it was like somebody talking about aliens, somebody talking about abductions. It just kind of snowballed until finally I'm like, okay, well, let's use. And I never thought I had any weird experiences. That was much later in my life.
Now, do this. I want you to talk about, because you do have podcasts as well that you do, because you run United Public Radio,
yeah.
And you're a host. We got a couple minutes. What do you talk about on your shows? What are they called? How do people get up with you? How do they hear you? You know, how do we get our listeners connected to what you do if they choose?
So what I personally host on Friday nights, I either host Science and Beyond, which is a science-based show. This week, the guest will be John Goodwin and Emily Goodwin. We won't be talking about science this week. We'll be talking about, we're going to be giving books away. Battlefield Earth is what we're giving away this week. We're giving away a box of them. And we're going to give away some Writers of the Future this year's edition, number 37. So if you don't know what Writers of the Future is, people, y'all should check into it. It's great. They do some great stories every year. But so that's Science and Beyond. A lot of times we just do mainly science. Now, it's Science and Beyond, so sometimes we geek out and get into some weird stuff that, you know, science can't quite figure out. But a lot of times it's hard stuff. And we take into some hard subjects like the Shroud of Turin. That was a tough show. My ex-co-host and I got into it several times. But don't get offended. If you hear any of the hosts fighting, we're all good friends. It's just fun. I said, we all stay friends afterwards. It's just, we does get heated when we have different opinions. That's fine on a network. I do UFO on the Cover on Wednesdays when I can. Right now I'm not doing it because my other career, my construction company, is keeping me really busy. But usually when we do it, we're really talking to either people changing the field or people that's having experiences, things along that time. We're not really big into UFOs because, I hate to say it, you're really not going to find anything chasing lights in the sky. It's a lot of fun. And it will really help pique your interest, but unless you're picking up and taking, you're just not getting anything out of it. And take that from personal experience. I'm not lying to you. I've been many UFO, but it is a lot of fun. I host a panel show on Monday called Paranormal Talk. It's most of the hosts on the network show up, and we just talk about whatever topic may be on the floor that day. Sometimes it's ufology, sometimes it's demons, sometimes it's ghosties. Sometimes it's ghost boxes and stuff like that. Just depends what the topic matter is. You get a lot of famous people come on the network on all the shows. I was telling Jordan earlier, we've got Canada's Most Haunted on there, which is Michelle DeRocher. If you ever watch any paranormal on TV, if you haven't seen Michelle, you're not watching paranormal TV. She's on every game show you can see. Well, she's like one of the go-to girls for advising. You know, though, I call her the Elvira of Canada, except she's got flaming red hair instead of black. But she hosts with Amelia Pisano, who does true crime. She helps find missing babies and stuff like that. It's a really good show, and they really get
that's
the stuff
neat.
Together. Yeah, they're both very, very empathic, so they're a lot of fun to deal with. We have America's Most Haunted, which is Michael Angry. He does two shows for us. He does Discovery Paranormal, which is just that, talking about paranormal, and the group he works with. And he does Red Pill News on Thursday, which is talking about the news and stuff like that. So. And then I'm on Saturday. Now, this is a signature show, and this is a hard show to get. It's called The Gray Zone Uncensored. Michelle and I do this show because we both have large audiences and we like to give them something extra. But I'm going to tell you a little secret. It's only on 5 to 7 on Saturdays, and you cannot get it after it airs. Currently, there's no way to get it now. We're going to put it back on YouTube probably starting at Christmas. But it's
so you hear it live, and that's it.
Yeah, and eventually it'll be back with members only on YouTube somewhere, but not probably until after Christmas. There's lots of shows. This will be show 49 coming up this week. We have a lot of fun. They're very, very informative. Michelle's an excellent researcher. And so we do. There's a lot of research goes in these shows, and we've been doing ufology the last 2 weeks. We had a weird record last week of 4.2 million. We're both still kind of stunned by that, to be honest with you. It usually does between like 2.5 and 3. I'm not sure what happened next week. I guess there was a lot of people home. I'm just still weirded out about it.
They were all under quarantine.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Well, maybe it's because people have learned now that you can't. Because the only one of them we ever put up for archive, it almost made in the archive. So.
Now, what's the site or address, or how do they listen to the program?
That one, let me see it. UPRNTalkRadio.com. It's UPRNRadio.com. Yeah, I tell you, I try to make things easy, like iCarOne.com. I just like easy stuff. We still have UFO Paranormal Radio, by the way. Y'all can go there. I think it's UFOParanormalRadio.com. But both of the sites are up. It's just UFO Paranormal Radio site. I don't think it hasn't been updated in probably longer than George's oldest child. So it's been
that means it's still airing my old show.
Yeah, well, all your old shows on. And Whispers Radio is... I got to hunt around now. I ain't going to lie. It's not like you can find them easy, but you got to hunt around on networks. But they should be available on SoundCloud, on Podbean, and on some of the YouTube channels. So you should be able to find them there. Eventually, I'll get him his lovely face on cam with us. And in case y'all didn't know, most of our shows now are video also. So you get to see all the hosts' lovely faces. And most of them are lovely. Some of them are a bit scary, but most for the most part, we got a good-looking group of hosts, and you know we have a lot of interesting shows too. We got some for everybody. One thing you'll find out about United Public Radio is we have no God belief. What I mean by this is we represent at least 11 different religions on the network, okay. And we also have 2 atheists on the network. When it comes to politics, we represent every political view on the network, and everybody's allowed to express the view. So, the Centralist, which is my own show where I do central politics, sometimes we'll do panels on that. Everybody's invited. So, you know, we've got 2 hardcore liberals. We got 2 hard conservatives, which are always fun listening to them. We have a libertarian. We have a couple of independents. We have a couple of centralists. And we have a couple of just weird political views. But everybody gets on there, everybody talks. And what's great about this is we'll get into like the Trumpsters or the Biden or whatever it might be. We go back to Obama sometime. When it's over with, one, you're going to get way more information than you ever thought possible at a radio show. And two, you'll be amazed at the end of the show. We'll all be laughing. You'll be swearing in the middle of the show. One of us is going to kill the other. but we're all friends. That's the thing. Political views aside, religious views aside, we all work together. We're all friends. And in the end, we're going to be friends. We just know that it's radio and it's entertainment. And so for us, we want to offer you entertainment and education at the same time. That's why it says on the site, the new learning channel, because that's what we really are. We do a lot of teaching of everything we can from, oh, we got 2 full-blown witches on the network that practice. And that's just talking about witchcraft, but they actually follow the holidays. So, like I said, we represent everything, and we like it that way. I personally, well, think about it, Jordan, you've been around radio for a long. Most radio stations you go to are going to have 1 political view, 1
and that's
view.
It.
And that's it. And I can't do that because half the time I don't know what view I got.
at least you're aware.
Yeah. And somebody told me one time, I remember this. This was so funny. I get this letter from a regular follower of you from the cover. She writes to me. She goes, Joe, you're one of the most brilliant ufologists I have ever heard. She said, but when it comes to politics, you're a blanket, 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 blank. I wrote back, well, thank you very much. At least you listened.
I appreciate the listen.
And what else was I going to say? You know, because when it comes to politics, people, I tell people all the time, especially some of my bigger hosts, it's best to stay out of it. Unless you have audiences like I do, it's best to stay out of it. I cultivated the centralist audience so it'll sit away from my other 3 shows, which are all dealing in paranormal genres or science genres.
Yeah.
So, because I learned, if I was to talk about what I talked about at centralist on UFO, I'd lose half my audience. They'd be like, well, whatever, Joe, you done string some wacky stuff or something. But you can find us on all on UFO. United Public Radio is the easiest. Just type it in. We're everywhere. I mean, when I say everywhere, we're everywhere. You can still type in UFO Paranormal Radio too. But George, still, you should be able to find Whispers on United Public Radio too. So that's UPRNTalkRadio.com and then iCarl1.com. That's the best ways to find us.
Hey, we need to get Fireside on there, Joe.
Well, we're going to get you on there. We'll have to get a couple of shows up. We'll get you sent. When you get me this one, show me where to get the shows from, and I'll get you syndicated somewhere. I don't know where, but we'll find somewhere. I got to watch. I got to be careful because, I know you said you're going to get lucky. You know most of our shows paid the network now, right?
I won't tell if you won't.
I just thought I'd give you a heads up. By the way, while we're on this commercial, this is Jordan's a friend of mine. Jordan came with us way back. Way. We had to take the Wayback Machine to get back there, but they've always done a good show on the network. It's always been a lot of fun to listen to. I'll find your spot. And the reason why we charge enough people is because we offer people a built-in audience now. So, like with DeRoche, and then when they came on, I told them, I said, when my show ends, it's going to be between 2 million and 3 million listeners. All you got to do is keep them.
Hey, here's what's crazy. Here's what's crazy, and I was going to bring this up earlier in the show when you were talking about how many members iCar had, and I'm going through, and again, you know, I'm 37 now. I've known you for, 15 or so years?
Oh, my God. You know, you feel like maybe like that's crazy to ride.
So, like, I'm thinking, like, as many times as I've been on the air with you, I've never one time asked you how large iCar was.
Yeah, well,
it could have been you in a tinfoil hat in your mama's basement, and I'm like, he's the president of iCar. I never even asked.
When it first started out, you know, there was, I think in the very beginning, it was like 50, 100 of us, and then 200 of us. You know, too, we got a kick from, what is his name? The Uralians. It was that crazy UFO group. The guy was buying up all kind of land in Israel. What the hell were they calling themselves? They're still around even today. But we got a big kick in from them.
Uh-huh.
We got like two of our people went and infiltrated them. And we wanted to see what they were about. Aliens, that's what they were, the aliens. And I still remember, I can't talk about what the first report was on this radio show, but oh my God. But anyway, we managed to steal some of their members as well, so that helps. Look, people, anybody can join iCar. You don't have to be a member. You don't have to give us any money or anything. We just want your number and your story. And if we find what you send us interesting, somebody will contact you. And if we don't, doesn't mean you're not. Just means either we're too busy or you need to add some more information in there to get somebody's attention. Because, you know, remember, we hear this a lot. All the directors, and, you know, there's a lot of directors that are young directors, but a lot of old directors. And really, you want to just get somebody's attention. Be honest, though, okay? Don't make shit up. Folks, y'all making me curse tonight. Don't make stuff up. Because really and truly, one of the directors will figure out, and then they'll blackball you with everybody. Because if you go to another network or another organization, we hear you talking, we're going to call them and say, hey, this is what they told us. And then that'll just be how that works out. Look, and I'm going to tell you a little secret before we go. Ufology, only about 15% of the people in ufology agree with each other. In abduction research, it's about 85% of us agree.
Wow.
We agree that it's 10 to 15% of the world's population being taken. Thank you, Alfred Weber, for making that public. I was on Alfred Weber's show one night. And he goes, oh, well, that's 1.5 billion people. Oh, my God. I got emails. I'm still getting emails from that. And that was 15 years ago.
Wow.
I was like, Alfred. And he said, well, people need to know. And I was like, Alfred, no, they don't. You know, it was so crazy that the Australian Science Journal did a whole story on me.
Oh, gosh.
And I was like, they were like, this is why this can't be possible. And they did all this work. And then I went and did a dissertation on it and sent it back to them. I said, this is why you're wrong and I'm right. And I noticed they published it and they never tried to argue. Don't ask me. I've been around a long time. I'm not a rookie. I'm like, well, you know how people want to bully people. That's something, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you get into this field, wherever you get into it, the old timers sometimes will bully on you, and sometimes the outside of the media will bully on you. So just be ready for it. It's a shame that that has to go, but most of the media knows me now, so they don't bully with me because I'm way too nasty for that kind of stuff. I'll be like, oh, you want to play this game? Well, hold on a minute. Let me go get on the air, like I told the AT&T lady who ended up getting fired and cost AT&T a bunch of money. That's the thing,
because they don't know you're a nutter.
Hey, well, no, I tell them all the time. I said, look, I own a station. I know what's legal and what's not legal. And if y'all want to play these games, sure, we can play these games. I recorded the whole woman's conversation with me and made it public. They went crazy. They had lawyers calling me. We ceased and desist things. Louisiana and Mississippi is a one-state record law. As long as one of us is willing, there ain't nothing you can do about it. And since it was in her own voice, they couldn't make me take it down because it wasn't a lie. They lost it. They finally, it took them like a month and a half, they fired the girl. They refunded all my money. They gave me a brand new phone and 3 years of free service.
Not too shabby.
Because it was killing them. They had to get it off the air. It was killing them. Because other networks were starting to pick it up and stuff. They were like, oh, this has got to go. This has got to go.
Quick, pay them off.
But, one other weird thing before we get out of here, something y'all can think about for next time I come and harass Jordan. All of y'all, especially you God-fearing people, I want you to understand this. You have a reptilian section in your brain. Don't take me for my word, because people always get so mad when I say this. I had a lady stand up at lecture and cuss me like you wouldn't believe. God would never do that to me. I said, well, God might have been part reptilian. I said, because you have a reptilian section in your brain. And I still remember she did. She cussed me. Like a week later, I get a phone call from her and she apologized to me. She went and looked it up on the internet. It's the part of y'all, and this is crucial because it fits in with the Sumerian, Dogon, Egyptian story from way back in the day, how today's man came to be.
Yeah.
That reptilian section makes us what we are. It's what makes us that aggressive, makes us want to go out and challenge life, and makes us ask, why do I have to do this? A really important piece of who and what we are. And according to Sumerian texts, there was a race just like us that didn't have that. They were subservient and did whatever they were told. They said the reptilians used to sneak in, steal the women, rape them, bring them back. And the children that were born like this. They were more engaging. Eventually, when there was enough of them, they overthrew the regime and moved on. And the Dogon talk about this, the Egyptians talk about this, and the Sumerians talk about this. And
wow.
We all do. You know, we all have that reptilian section in our brain. So now, if you got a reptilian section, you're Rh negative, you got green eyes, oh man, you're definitely a reptile of some kind.
Next time I have you on, I really want to discuss the different types of aliens, because I know you're going through it, and a lot of our listeners, you know, are new to the paranormal as well. Excuse me. Go ahead.
I said, no, next time we get on, we'll go through them all. It's just tonight we're just kind of hitting, touching here and there. And you might be a gray, George. You better watch out, man. I'm just saying.
I feel
like your furniture. Uh-oh. Have you ever just sat in a chair? Like, you know, you're tired, you're sitting there, and it feels like you're kind of like melting into the dimension or something. Be careful, man. I'm just saying.
No, Joe, you know I'm fat, so you
We're all fat. We're American.
When I sink into the chair, I'm sinking.
Oh. It's it's just because people write to me sometimes. Hey, I get this feeling like it's like a, how can I explain it? It's like a like it's a vibration or a wave that's coming over them that they can feel. Like sometimes when they're going to sleep, it's like catching up before they go to sleep. I don't know how to explain it. I'll have to figure out a better way to explain it, but it does it gives you. I don't know, I have to figure out how to explain this. See, I was talking about this the other day, and I said I got to figure out how to explain this. I'm going to work this through on one of my lectures, but it's this feeling. It's like falling forward, but actually not falling forward, and then falling backwards, but actually not falling backwards.
Mm-hmm.
It's sitting there, but you can feel it, but you're not actually moving. It's almost.
I know the feeling you're talking about.
Because I know if you have people with high blood pressure, you'll probably know what I'm talking about too. But this is just a thing that probably means that you've been taken. But still, you know, you start seeing weird stuff flying in the sky, and your kids start speaking some weird language, and you know, things like that. Oh yeah, they start drawing these weird things that you're like, "What's that, son? What? That looks like an alien." Get worried is all I can tell you. We'll have to talk about that one time too, about how parents reacted knowing their children are being taken.
You start seeing crazy stuff out there, guys. You know, it's time to call Uncle Joe.
Well, it's funny because somebody asked me one time, "Do they take your children?" I said, "Of course they do. Just like they took your mom and your grandma and your great grandma and your great great granddaddy, and all the way back to when you first started in your family 50,000 years ago, 100,000 years ago." I said, "They definitely see that. And you know what's most interesting about this? Think about a gray. Grays live for millions of years. So if this is the same gray who took your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother, removed another 50 times, and is the one taking you, they know your family intimately. They know things about your family you'll never know.
Wow.
Hell, they'll know reincarnation is real because they'll know if they see you again. It's a strange thing to think about, but they do abduct in family lines, and they say the same aliens are the ones doing the same things. So it always freaks me out a little bit. It's a little bit weird, if you ask me.
Yeah, we're going to have to dig into that. We are out of time for today. Joe, it has been a pleasure. Joe Montaldo, look him up. ICAR, United Public Radio. Check that out with everything he has going on. It is an absolute pleasure, and we will talk again, sir.
I appreciate it, Jordan. Thanks, man.
Thank you. And with that, the fire is out. Thank you guys so much for joining us this week. Remember to check us out on all the social media platforms. We've got Twitter, at Fireside Parapod, Instagram, TikTok. I think both of those are at Fireside Paranormal. Our Facebook group, Fireside Paranormal Hub. I think we're about to do a giveaway on there. We had an artist say that she was wanting to donate some art we're going to make a shirt out of. Chris Balzano is actually autographing a couple books for a giveaway. So that's going to be a good time. Definitely check that out. Fireside Paranormal Hub. Join that on Facebook. Go to firesideparanormal.com. We have episodes there. You can also get to our merch. Remember, we got the Krampus design that is for a limited time only. And we have the new Patreon set up. So patreon.com/firesideparanormal. Remember, $2 gets you that name drop and access to our Discord. And that wraps it up for tonight. So until next week, everybody, don't be afraid, only believe.